Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete, and you're a baby Justin.
And yeah, sorry, I'm Justin's son. I was here to do a podcast with young people, but this is not clearly.
All right, now this is great. We're going to be talking to Justin's son here about, I believe, TikTok. He's going to instruct us on TikTok, and we're going to teach him about old floppy old comic books. We're coming to you live at a couple of places. Justin's telling me the sound didn't play at the beginning, so you know what? I'm going to roll it in later. It's all great.
Great.
I texted you sort of a subtle behind-the-scenes channel, and you're just like bringing it all on Front Street.
Hey, man. Got to be honest with our listeners and viewers here. We're live at a couple of places. We're live at Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. Maybe we're coming to you later wherever you get the podcast. If we're coming to you later where you get the podcast, you're getting the opening music. So that's pretty cool.
Justin, what's
it like to have a smooth face?
I'll tell you what, I don't love it. I miss my old, and it'll grow back. My wife and I did a, for Halloween, which as we all know was recent, we went as Better Call Saul and Kim Wexler. I was Kim.
You were the classic character Better Call Saul, as you explained just that.
100%.
I saw that picture. It was very cute. Your daughter took the picture, right?
Yes, which was, she did a great job.
A young Vince Gilligan, I would say.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, we made a whole episode. It's crazy. I hope Vince likes it.
Oh, what happened? Did you continue the story? Did we find out what happened next?
Yeah, I mean, no spoilers, but things get a little crazy.
As usual. What a crazy show. Pete, what did you do for Halloween? You were telling me you were really working your gams out.
Yeah, I'm real hungover because I had so much walking to do. I just decided I was going to get crazy drunk so I could just kind of plow through it.
A lot of Olympic athletes do that.
Yeah.
Famously.
Yeah, so I just I logged 8 miles going from house to house with the kids, man.
Now, let me ask you a question here. This is a very inopportune question. I'm sure you're not going to enjoy it, but this is the first thing that came to my mind. So you're walking 8 miles to various houses. You're getting wasted the entire time.
Right, right.
Did you ask to use people's bathrooms when you went to the door, or did you?
What kind of crazy drunk do you think I am, man? I mean, what?
This is the content people have been waiting for.
Yeah, exactly.
I need a map. No. I need a map of Pete's pee breaks.
Yeah, you do Pete's circle. You come back, fill up, drop off.
Oh, fill up.
Go and kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Wait, that's a weirder answer than I expected. You bring a second pumpkin bucket for peeing in?
Yeah, what? By the end of the night, you're just like, hey, kids, you want what's in this bowl? And that's pretty much it.
There you go, man.
Too much right here at the top of the show. Halloween fun times. I'm glad everybody had a good time. Justin is clearly checking with his dad to make sure if it's okay for him to be at a show this late.
Yeah, can I do this podcast?
It's all right, son. You'll be fine. Why don't we bring in our first guests here? We have some great guests for you this evening. The first ones are the creators of a new book that's currently with Heavy Metal called Mark of Kings, Dr. Seuss Stein and Mr. Fernando Perez. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, my goodness. Uh-oh. Terrible echo. That did not happen during our tech check. This is bad. Maybe turn down the volume a little bit, and that'll help. More behind-the-curtain stuff going on.
Hey, nice.
Yes. But very excited to have you guys here. Very excited to talk about this book. So Mark of Kings, the first issue is out from Heavy Metal. You already have issue 2, 3, and 4 on your website. Potentially they're going to be coming out from Heavy Metal as well. So for those who haven't picked this up, before we even get to the concept of the book, I'm curious. I feel like everybody, or at least I'll age myself, I know Heavy Metal from like the animated movie and like the shorts and that thing. And I know they're a whole brand at this point, but What's it like working with heavy metal? What makes a heavy metal book at this point, and how did you get hooked up with them?
I'll let Susie take that one because she's the one that instigated that one.
Oops, is that me? I'm sorry.
Yes, it's definitely.
That's better.
Yeah.
No.
Still echoing, but it's kind of cool. We're talking about heavy metal and you got a sweet reverb going.
Yes. What I did was I thought maybe because we had all four issues out, maybe we could serialize it in their magazine. So I sent a cold letter to the CEO and I sent him the read-only copies. And the next thing I know, he says, this was during the pandemic, 2020. And he said, we are putting together a new comic book line called Virus because of the virus. And because Diamond Distribution had stopped distributing and there was a whole thing going on where people weren't getting their comics.
Oh, yeah.
So what we did was met with him and we were all set. We had reasons why they needed us and how great this magazine was going to, you know, be because of our comic. And he said, yeah, let's do it. And we didn't have to say anything.
Didn't
ruin it. We just kept our mouths shut. And so what they did ask for, however, was new covers, because we had our fourth issue is Mike McComb, but they wanted us to work with Tony Harris. So they put us together with Tony Harris. Tom Mandrake did 2 and 3. And we got to sign at San Diego Comic-Con. They've been, you know, great to work with so far.
That's amazing.
That is
Tony Harris, I love his artwork. I'm a huge fan of Starman, a book that he did the art for. So very cool to see this cover on the top of your comic.
Yeah, we never would have met him if it hadn't been for Keith, our Keith Champagne, our editor at Heavy Metal.
So talk a little bit about the concept of this book. I mean, we'll get into the content, which, true to the heavy metal form, I think you found the right place for it. Like, there's some extreme stuff that goes on in here, but it also has a pretty concrete pitch. So why don't you give us that to start off?
So actually, I came up with the concept of the story back when I was in college, about this. And actually, one of the characters, Bishop, actually is based off of one of your listeners, Stray Bullet.
Stray Bullets?
The character of Bishop in the script that the comic is based off of had the spiky hair, which he had back in college, rode a motorcycle, which he did in college. And I was thinking, okay, this could be this character for the story. And apparently he still does.
Wow.
So the story is about an ex-priest that's now a vampire who must locate the secret heir to a vampire kingdom in order to stop the resurrections of a centuries-old war between the vampires, the Vatican, and the military. Almost kind of like a Game of Thrones kind of meets Underworld kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
I want to make it a story with vampires for adults. You know, these vampires don't sparkle. You know, this I wanted it to be kind of like a little bit darker, a little bit gritty, and it seemed to fit the heavy metal platform.
Yeah, great.
So talk to us more about Brett Macris's role.
Let's hear more stories. What inspired?
Is he a vampire or a priest in his college?
He was a priest, but then he got bit. And so he kind of lost his faith. Like, how could this happen to me? And so he's a half-breed vampire. And so the story also deals with a little bit of racism, because you have, of course, the mortals, the immortals, but also a little bit of the within the immortals. Oh, you're a half-breed. You're not a purebred like me. You know, so it deals a lot of it with that in the script. Touches a little bit on that in the comic with the main villain, Lucard.
And like I was intimating earlier, the violence, and I think appropriately so, you're dealing with a vampire story, goes wildly over the top and gets super bloody. How far could you push things? Like, how far did you allow yourself to push things? Did you feel like you needed to push it even further? Talk to me about that a little bit.
Sure. I didn't want to hold anything back. I mean, I liked the movies where the vampires were scary. They were
soulless.
They were fearless. Whether it was a purebred vampire or a half-breed, it was that primal instinct of I need to feed no matter what. you know, that self-preservation thing. So whatever those, you know, killing cows or killing, you know, your next door neighbor, they needed to eat. And so I wanted it to be bloody. I wanted it to be
brutal,
very, very brutal on that vampire telling.
Yeah.
And you did it. Oh, I'm looking ahead, at this page right now of the, I guess, morgue hammer going through
his
face with very articulated teeth flying out. the focus on dentistry is impressive.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be like a vampires for adults with a little bit of sci-fi, move a little bit away from the classic noir of like they don't see the reflection in the mirrors. Try to throw a little bit of stuff into that where they actually can, some can't, you know. So just bringing up our own little universe. And Susie helped me get the original concept, and we took some things out that didn't make sense anymore in this day and age, because I came up with the idea once again back in the 90s when I was in college. And then Susie threw in some ideas, things just worked out. And
it was important, like we have strong female characters, mortals and immortals. I think that's really important. I like to see that, and I know a lot of people do.
Yeah, for sure. I actually have a question about the mirror thing you brought up. I haven't done a lot of deep dive into vampire lore. The mirror thing has always struck me as sort of a weird tacked on vampire thing. Is it based, or if you don't know, if you have a guess, like, is it based on like your soul? You don't have a soul, so you can't see yourself in the mirror.
I would think so. I also think it's a device so you can tell who's a vampire and who's not.
right.
But also going back to the soul thing, I liked it where if you ever saw Underworld, I think there was a scene in there, if I recall, where one of them's looking in the mirror, they see themselves. And so I took that more like a scientific approach. If you're a half breed, that you were once human, you could see your reflection in the mirror. But if born that way, then you can't. Wow. You know, and so there's that difference. Oh, you can see yourself in the soul. You're, you know, you're a lesser person than we are.
It's funny. Vampires are all, in a lot of different stories, are meticulously dressed. But technically, they can't see what they look like at all.
Exactly.
What's the deal? They're such
dandies. That would be awful.
Exactly.
It's the sort of thing where they might like make a huge mistake and shave their beard and then look
Wow.
I'm just saying
that's a strange hypothetical.
20 times a day be like, how's my hair
Now, you touched on this a little bit before, but you two have worked together not just on this but another book, Inversion, as well. What is the working relationship like? How do the two of you work together?
I think we work well. We only argue when we're writing and only occasionally. But yeah, so we have this thing where if you start it, like I started Inversion and Fernando started Mark of Kings. So we agree on an outline, a story, and one of us gets started and the other person puts in their input. But if we do have a disagreement, the person who's taking the lead has what we call final say.
Oh, nice.
Which means if you say final say, that means
that's it.
We're done. But it's also a lot of responsibility, because we wrote a script once where I said final say, this is the ending. And then we got dinged on the ending by a judge in a contest.
Ooh.
And he liked, his suggestion was Fernando. So yeah, it's not as easy as it sounds just to say final say.
I collaborate with my wife on a couple.
Yeah. And so you want people to read it how you see it. So you got to be sure that it's not more of an ego thing, but what's good for the story.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I hear you. Because I collaborate with my wife on a couple children, and I have final say on one and she has final say on the other one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually, we found the hardest thing we've ever done together is a two-person canoe.
Oh, that was hard. Truly.
Writing is not hard.
That's great. Yeah.
Let's talk about Inversion for a second, because I love the tone of this book. It seems on the surface to be this like very intense time travel action movie thing, but there's a certain cheeky jokiness to it at the same time. So could you talk about balancing those two tones?
Yeah, we always say it's Looper meets Lethal Weapon. Mm-hmm. We're fans of the 80s buddy cop kind of vibe. And like 48 Hours. What's the Christmas movie we just saw? Danny Glover and Mel Gibson.
Lethal Weapon.
Sorry, I'm a little tired. Yeah, so we like to bring everybody up with the tension and then drop it with a joke, let everyone relax, and then bring it back up again.
Smart. Nice. Well, I love it. And you have a couple of issues of that out as well. Where can people check out all the stuff that you do? Where's your website?
They could go ahead and get those at our website, which is entityentityeye.com. Excellent. And we have a little store there where they could get copies of Inversion. They could buy a first copy of Market Kings. I think it takes you to the Heavy Metal.
Yeah, and that'll take you to the Heavy Metal website where you can get the first issue of Market Kings.
Nice. Cool. And you can get you have the next couple of issues of Mark of Kings ready to go at this point, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Nice. And you can also get a candle because I don't ask. We have candles. It's not something. Yeah, it was a mistake, but
she had final say on that one.
Don't ask.
When you brought up something that's very unique and different. Yeah. And now we're not allowed to ask about it. So it's a tough spot to be in.
Absolutely.
Yes, Brett. Bishop is an amazing character. You're going to like him.
Amazing. I love this. Guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure chatting. Congrats on all the success.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to the next one.
So much fun.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Great books.
All right. There. Once again, check out Mark of Kings from Heavy Metal. And that was Dr. Susie Stein and Mr. Fernando Perez. Very cool. We are going to bring in our next guest here. He is the creator of the book Bigfoot Knows Karate, which is currently on Kickstarter for issue 2. Dan Price, everybody. Hello, Dan.
Hey guys. Thanks so much for having me on tonight.
Wow, look at that wall.
You bet.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, Pete. I actually did want to turn it over to Pete first for the wall interview. Pete,
walk us through that wall a little bit there. It's amazing stuff going on.
Oh, yeah, no, I got a Dalek. My family got me that a while back, and I think we bought that at Comic Palooza several years back. Nice. You know, I love Adam West. I got to meet Adam West. Years back, as a special thing that my agent at the time had set up for me. And so I'm just a big Adam West fan. And then the rest of this is all Bigfoot Knows Karate stuff for the most part over here. Yeah. And so I've been really lucky to get to work with some amazing artists, and we received a ton of fan art for the comic. I mean, it's been over 100 pieces of fan art that we've received in the last year or so. And this particular piece, I'll take it off the wall for you.
Yeah.
This was a piece of fan art that was sent to me by a gentleman named Adam Caswell. Let me get in close so you can see the detail.
Wow.
And
that's really weird. We seem to be in the art as far as I can tell.
Reflecting. It's weird you're not there because you're a vampire.
I don't know how reflections work. I've never seen this before.
So Adam sent me this as a piece of fan art and said to me, "I'm going to mail it to your house." I said, "That's insane." And I said, "I can't just accept this." So I paid him for it, and we put it as the variant cover for our deluxe edition for issue 1. And so that's turned into a friendship between myself and Casey Allen, my co-writer, and Adam. He is doing the wraparound cover for the deluxe edition variant for issue 2. And then he's also doing the interiors on a side story for Bigfoot Knows Karate that we're working on as well. I got to hang out with him this weekend at Baltimore Comic Con, and he tabled with me over the weekend, and it was a blast. So, I mean, it's amazing what a piece of fan art will do, you know?
Yeah. What a cool story.
Yeah. So, you know, and then some other pieces by Luis Tomas, Matthew Skillern. He was a cover artist on issue 1 as well. Jevin Loop over here. This one's small. I'll take it off the wall. This is a little postcard piece that Jevin did. And but we've received some amazing artwork from people, and my wall is just getting more and more naked as I start taking things down. But anyway, but yeah, no, it's just been a blast by the reception that we've received on this comic.
So what, Bigfoot knows karate. Now, is this something you learned in practice, or is this something
yeah, did you see
hog
a blurry Bigfoot practicing karate? Is that how you came up with this?
Well, I had been drinking a lot of cough medicine out in the wilderness one night. No, nothing like that. But no, originally, so my original project that I worked on was something called Latex Avenger. And Latex Avenger, he had a sidekick spermicidal foam lad, and together they repelled crime 99.9% of the time. your face is priceless, man. This was a real comic. I did about 8 issues of it, and it just came back for a crossover with Halloween Man here recently. But Bigfoot Knows Karate was going to live in the Latex Avenger universe. It was going to be a full-on comedy, and I wrote the script, and it wasn't good. It just wasn't good. You know, you have to be honest with yourself, right? And so I shelved it, but I loved the name. And about 2017, 2018, I started resketching the character. It looked sad and, you know, and introspective. And, you know, I was thinking about the psyche of a Bigfoot. If you were alone and nobody knew you existed and nobody cared, you know, what would that do to you? And, you know, karate. You know, so it was,
yeah.
And so that's how the story was born. It was really, I was really trying to do something that wasn't the trite martial arts movie that you've seen that plot so many times. Guy gets hurt. He gets found by the master trains him up, you know, yada, 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 revenge. You know, I mean, we've seen that so many times. And how do you have a revenge story with a Bigfoot when he has nothing, has no one, there's nothing to get revenge for. So it was really, you know, my mind was moving pretty hard on that one, trying to, you know, come up with something original and unique. And I think between myself and Casey Allen, we've come up with something that, you know, will get you, you know, so we're pretty happy with it.
Great. Oh, well, you're on mute.
Oh, Alex, you're muted weirdly. It's strange. I feel like it's almost like a vampire, but for audio. No, you're going to have to sign out, sign back in, Alex.
Yeah,
that's the
you're
going
to have
works,
to, you know. Weirdly.
If Alex leaves, does the whole thing shut off? I don't know.
Yeah, it would be fun to find out.
So then tell us about, so this Kickstarter, this is chapter 2 that you're, I mean, you're already well-funded.
We are in chapter 2, you know, chapter 2, Born Under a Bad Sign. And can we hear you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we
Yay.
Can.
Yay.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Wait, just a quick Fanta. Question. Could you hear this?
Yep.
Great. Always love doing a tech check in the middle of the show. Great. Sorry, take it away.
No worries. So, we are in issue 1, or in issue 2. You know, issue 1 introduced the character, kind of set up, you know, started to set up the world that we're in. You know, he fought Kung Fu Thulu in the Cryptid Showdown of the Century. Wow. So you got a martial arts fighting Cthulhu, a martial arts fighting Bigfoot. But then we did, you know, there was a really big twist at the end. We kind of likened the book to Godzilla versus Kong meets Kill Bill with a twist. That's, you know,
that's a
really
pitch. I love it.
Thank you so much. And so the issue 1, you know, you've got this character that's completely isolated and no one knows. And now in issue 2, he's completely surrounded by enemies. What's better, to be completely alone, or wherever you go, somebody's looking to do you in? So we kind of, you know, Casey said to me about a year back, he goes, you think we're going off the rails on this one? And I said, dude, we started off the rails, man. All we can go is further and further. And
where
and,
we're going, you know, we people... don't need rails.
Exactly. There you go, Doc. There you go. For sure.
Well, talk to me about, this is the question I was going to ask earlier. Talk to me about the Kickstarter a little bit. So you've done the second issue here. I'll bring it up here. The great news is that it is already successful with 10 days to go, which is awesome. I think you've doubled at this point your goal.
Yes.
So what are you looking for here? I assume you have some stretch goals going on and other things. What's the end game for this Kickstarter?
The end game is, what's the end game?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, so we do have some stretch goals. We're doing a 2 sticker pack for the first stretch goal. If we hit $60 more, then we're going to do a trading card or bookmark. I'll put up a poll on my Instagram when we do that. When every time we hit the stretch goal, I put up a poll so everybody can vote on, you know, would you like this or that? And that's how we got to we got to the first stretch goal. So we'll continue that party happening on this one as well. So, yeah, and mostly, you know, we really have a streamlined campaign this issue. Really, you know, it's mostly book focused. Don't have a lot of ancillary, you know, things like that, but we really got great response on the amount of covers that we did last time. And the thing that people were asking for this time was they loved the regular editions, they loved the deluxe editions, and I'll go into that, but they wanted a foil. That was like one of the things that I heard about the most. And so we did a foil cover with Luis Tomas. We have our regular editions, which are going to be a 37 page. It says 33 in here, but we actually extended the book a couple of weeks ago. So hey, you're getting a little extra. So we're gonna extend the book to 37 pages. So the regular edition is that. The deluxe edition is the 37 page story plus. Okay, and that's going to include the director's commentary, as well as an art gallery for fan art, as well as, you know, some sketch work that are, you know, page samples that for the side story that Adam Caswell is doing for us. So we've got some cool things lined up. You know, got that preview. And then the director's commentary is just huge. People loved that on the first issue. I've always wanted to do director's commentaries for a comic, you know, like you had in a DVD, but how do you do it? Print it oversized with notations and stuff? That seems like a headache. Hit the QR code instead, and it takes you to a YouTube video where we go into a roundtable discussion heads that goes deep into the book. So we have, so we did that the last time. We did like a 2-hour deep dive on issue one because we sold issue one like it was a punch 'em up. That's all we said. Bigfoot Knows Karate, Kung Fu Thulu, that was the whole thing. And, but now that gave us an opportunity to really discuss the comic at length. And so we're looking forward to doing that again this go around.
Awesome.
That's so cool.
That is so cool. And I do love the idea of just focusing on the comics with the Kickstarter. You know, nothing against anybody who's done other Kickstarters, but I feel like that's the main draw. That's the reason you're doing it, right? So it is nice to get buttons. It's nice to get statues and all of these other things. But ultimately, the product that you're actually selling is the comic. So that's got to be there and that's got to be good.
The one thing that we're looking at doing for issue three is we've gotten a lot of requests for plushies, Bigfoot Knows Karate plushies. So we may do that on the next go around. I did t-shirts last time. That was fine. Bit of a headache, you know, but it was fine, you know. So this time I really try to streamline it, make it easy for us, make it easy for them, not too many options, but you know, be able to, you know, we have retailer packs this time. That was a big request from the last issue. We sold ads in the first issue. People asked for more of those. So we have ads in the comic for comic books or retailers or, you know, podcasters or, you know, that kind of thing. You want to get, there you go.
Cool. Awesome. Hey, maybe if that's really successful, you could just pivot the comic to just being ads. Right?
We're very close
just
to this
thought,
podcast
just
being
ads.
It'd be a 30-page story and 100-page of ads, you know, just to finance the whole thing.
Now, more ads than ever.
Exactly.
Dan, congratulations on this success. I'm very excited to check this one out, and I'm excited to see issue three as well. I'm definitely going to pick up one of those Bigfoot plushies if they have.
Yeah, the plushies. Great idea. Everyone, it's very grabbable, huggable even.
There you go.
Squeeze Bigfoot. There you go.
I tried to do it in real life. Problematic.
Exactly. Dan, thank you so much. Have a great night.
Hey, y'all have a great evening. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Yeah, no problem.
All right, there once again, the book is Bigfoot Knows Karate. It's on Kickstarter now for the next 10 days. And folks,
simple, perfect. It's all in the title. I mean, it's a great package. It's a great package.
And you know what it is? It's a total
Netflix.
Right?
Yeah. That makes sense. Look how happy that made Alex today.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
We're going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up to your audience questions.
Get the audience questions.
All you got to do is drop a question and ask a question or in the comments over on YouTube, and we'll get to that. But first, what you drinking today, fellas?
Well, I just finished a Mai Tai, which was something I was very excited to make. I did some homemade pecan orgeat, which is the sort of syrup you put in the Mai Tai.
What the fuck?
And I'll tell you what, a lot of this is hyper-specific gourmet idea, but like orgeat's usually made from almonds. I made it with pecans, and I'll tell you what, it's better, I think. So get out there and go with it.
Try that out. That sounds good.
Dude. Yeah. But not people are losing their minds right now.
I know. The orgeat heads are crazy out there.
Yeah. The almond people are like, you go how
to that,
dare
by the way,
you
go into that orgeat orgy next week?
Yeah, it's great. Nutty. Nutty orgy. Pete, what can nuts. Of beer did you find?
I got you that shirt, right? That says, I lost my nuts at the orgeat orgy.
Nutflex.
Oh, wait. Let me just over there, I'll just start up that sound.
Netflix.
Oh, yeah, we'll just cut out the time in between there. Yeah, you know?
Nice.
Won't be such a pregnant pause. I found a nice kind of beer. It's tough to drink after, so, you know, the hair of the dog. It's called Thirst Monster. It's a Kolsch.
Nice. What a mouthful that word is, Cole.
Yep. I'm drinking a spicy mezcal margarita for Dia de los Muertos. I don't know if that's cultural appropriation or not. I apologize
Seems
if it
a little,
is.
Borderline, buddy.
Here's the thing. I love a spicy margarita, and any excuse to have it, I'll have it. So there you go.
Okay, sure.
Hard to argue with that.
Yeah. Why don't we get to some questions here? We actually got one. This was a couple of weeks ago, but we got it on Twitter, I believe, from Andrew Softly. Do you have any recommendations for documentaries or films about comic books?
Yes.
Ooh, docs.
Oh, Pete, you have one?
Yeah. So I would say it would go like American Splendor number one. Then, and this is just for me.
I think that's a doc, technically.
Well, it kind of is. It gets pretty meta.
I think it's a biopic.
Well, okay, fine. I mean, if you want to get technical. How about, so my second pick, Dear Mr. Watterson, that's definitely a doc. Batman and Bill is my third. And then I would go with Mindscape of Alan Moore and then Comic Book Confidential.
What? that's the most research Pete has ever done on this show.
I'm truly impressed, and those are all great recommendations, Pete.
They
That's
are
awesome.
Great. I'm actually, my pick is, I guess, the doc I'm making about the time Pete did research for a question on the show. I'm just going to snip out the last couple seconds of Pete talking.
For me, my favorite doc is the third interview that Pete did with Tim Seeley at New York Comic Con 2009.
Nice. It's true. It's very so much hugging. Too much.
Yeah, a lot of sparks flying. A lot of sparks flying in that.
Touchy feely is what.
Yes.
The title.
Nat does point out that American Splendor does have documentary footage. So yes.
Thank you, Nat. Thank you.
Absolutely. But those were great answers. I love that, Pete. This is from YouTube. Over the Big says, with the sad announcement of Stargirl's cancellation, will you guys finish the current season podcast? Any chance it will be saved on HBO Max? Is Superman WB next on the chopping block? Lots of questions there.
Well, let me throw out that I don't think HBO Max is much in the business of saving shows anymore.
Well, it's saving your show, hopefully.
Fair, but not out of not taking it from another network and saving it.
So if anybody doesn't know, Stargirl, DC Stargirl, was canceled by the CW with season 3. This is part of another slate of cancellations that are coming out of the network as they move over to being bought by Nexstar, which is a company that is leading into a bunch of things. They basically are a company mostly known for owning broadcast networks all across the country. They are going to be pivoting probably mostly to acquired programming and reality programming and cheaper things like that and leading into, well, here's the thing is they flat out said the average age of the viewer of the CW network on broadcast was 58 years old. So all of this teen programming that was going on, we can get into it. There's a lot to talk about there. There's a lot to parse out.
That's Riverdale hot, baby. Come on.
Well, the thing is, like, in very brief, Mark Pedowitz, who is the head of the CW network up until recently, he left because of these changes behind the scenes. I think very smartly lead into the idea of like, streaming is the future. I'm going to lead into streaming. Stop, Pete. I'm going to lead into streaming. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to aim for. Nobody's watching it on broadcast, so I'm going to do it there. Nexstar doesn't believe that. They want to lead it to broadcast because that's where their business is. So they canceled Nancy Drew. Nancy Drew is going to be running its fourth and final season, which is filming currently. DC Stargirl is going to finish out its third season. They did get advance notice of this, so they are going to have a chance to finish it on their own terms. Jeff Johns said, we did a finale, assuming this could potentially be the finale, so we're going to finish it out in a way that's satisfying. And most likely, this is not the last thing coming from the CW. To answer the last question, is Superman and Lois, I think is what the big is asking about, going to be on the chopping block? At this point, they have 8 drama shows, I believe, that are left for the 2022-2023 season. You have the 2 Walker shows, you have Superman and Lois, you have Gotham Knights, which is this superhero show that, to be honest, I am doubtful is ever going to see the light of day. I don't think it's actually going to end up there at all, the way things that are going. You've got 2 All-American shows, All-American and All-American Homecoming. You've got Kung Fu and something else that I'm forgetting, potentially.
Well, it strikes me, like, what are the... Sorry to cut in. I know you're in the...
No, it's fine. Pete has been enjoying my monologue.
My God, Jesus. Yeah, it's take a good drink, information. Man. Your mouth's got to be parched.
Yeah, sorry, Pete. I wasn't talking about comic book documentaries. Literally the only thing that you know anything about.
If the median age of the viewership was 58, what were they watching?
Riverdale.
What were all these
bro,
old folks
on.
Watching?
Come on.
Riverdale. My theory is their remotes were broken.
Well, I mean, that's what's
legitimately
about it.
Yeah.
It's very to be like, our median age is old. Let's cancel everything. I was like, well, those people are watching. There must be some sort of reason for the viewership. And to make a hard turn, I would think they would want to make a slower turn and maybe slowly turn the sort of age of your programming up a little bit. And maybe you pull in more people rather than, what if all these people were watching Stargirl? What if there's a secret retiree community? What if the Villages is like Stargirl crazy?
Yeah, but what if you did Birds of Prey, you know, meets Golden Girls? You know what I mean? Like, lean into that age group. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean?
I don't know. It's so hard to say, but I really do. Like, I'm joking about the remote broken thing, but I legitimately think it's just people are like, what's on? Let's turn on the TV and do something in the background while it's going. That's probably mostly what the broadcast stuff was going on. And they're going to spend exponentially less money on reality TV programming and acquiring things internationally. And in a place where you're working at a network where they've had a loss, I think, the entire time they've been in existence.
Yeah.
This is not to... I love the CW. I watch almost everything on the CW, and I am super bummed to see it go. But from a business perspective, I do understand the idea of, like, we got to start making money somehow. We can't keep losing money.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's fair. All of these businesses that are built on losing money does seem strange. And it seems like those birds of prey are coming home to roost.
Versus a podcast, for example, a podcast network, if you will, that's raking in money hand over fist.
100%. We keep our overhead low and our tech casual.
Superman and Lois, I don't know. The thing is, like, before they canceled Stargirl, which seemed on the chopping block anyway, and Nancy Drew, I sort of felt like, okay, they're going to try to like slow play it a little bit, like Justin was saying. But now I feel like they're just going to cut everything. Like maybe they'll keep Walker because it's Texas lawmen and that's sort of a universal all over the country thing.
Well, sort of a Yellowstone adjacent show that you maybe draws people in.
Superman and Lois is one that I feel like does well enough in the ratings that it's one that could be saved by HBO Max, but Stargirl wasn't doing that good, you know?
Yeah. And Mikey stopped eating candy.
Exactly. They took out the core of what made the show work, you know?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, do you think we will go back and recap the final season of Stargirl?
Do I think?
Yes, that was great one question. Of the questions.
I mean, I would do it. I like that show. If there was a quorum of, I want to say, two of which of the people are paying attention right now, I think we could do it. Yeah.
One of us is looking down and looking up more comic book documentaries.
He's watching one, maybe.
Great. We have a question here from Ben the Border Collie. Ben says, it's been a while. Can we hear sucking on a cheesesteak? Well, Ben the Border Collie.
Sucking on a cheesesteak.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Every time I hear it, it gets better.
This is just, it's not Q&A anymore. It's just fun with the soundboard with Alex Zelvin.
I'm sorry. That was a total.
You made that up. That was not an audience question at all.
It was Ben the Border Collie, who is a known quantity on this podcast.
Absolutely. This is from Kevin over on Crowdcast. What are some of your favorite surprising connections in comics, either within the stories or in the industry?
Ooh, interesting.
Huh.
I've always thought, this is hyper-specific. I always thought it was strange that the sort of Green Lantern family of Jade, Obsidian, and the original Green Lantern. Alan Scott. It seems like they're all related. That's aggressive.
Yeah. Pete, any answer there?
Yeah, I didn't hear the question. I was responding to Ben the Border Collie.
With ha? That was the thing that distracted
took
me.
A couple. Okay. Well, he had to find the H and then later find the
it took a while.
You have a separate keyboard for each letter, right?
Exactly. How do you have it?
Oh my God, so expensive. What are some of your favorite surprising connections in comics, either within the stories or in the industry?
Hmm. Why don't you go and give me a second to think about that?
Right. How about like Peter Parker had an Uncle Ben who died? Yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah, but his rice is pretty good, so.
Yep, same guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got to be honest. I don't have a good answer for that one. I'm not quite sure what this is based on or what it's
called. Well, surprising connection. It would be kind of like the Martha of the, you know, kind of like, why did you, that's my mom's name.
Well, I will
that's
say.
That's my mom's name.
In a movie that I was like, otherwise like not super excited about, I had never put together that they were both named Martha.
Wow.
So that did catch me off guard.
It's a terrible moment, though. We could agree on that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was deployed poorly. But the idea that they and also it's just a random coincidence. It's not like there's a real connection point there between two humans. Mm. But I was surprised that I never put that together.
We got a question here on YouTube from Nelson Martinez. Have you guys checked out The Midnight Club on Netflix? I'm about halfway through, seeing if you guys have possibly finished it.
I haven't watched that yet, but that is definitely on my list. It's a great show to watch in this sort of more haunted time of the year.
Thanksgiving time, you mean, right?
What's sell me on it here. What is it?
So The Midnight Club is based on the book by Christopher Pike. It comes from Mike Flanagan, who did The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor, among many, many other things.
Okay, so I'm out.
Yeah, definitely. I will say, so I've watched the first couple of episodes. I actually haven't finished it yet, even though I enjoyed the first couple of episodes, but it is a little more youth skewing. It is about a bunch of kids who are dying of various diseases. They all go to a hospice to live out the end of their life, which sounds very sad, but it's very much about them like figuring out what to live for sort of thing.
Yeah.
And what the new character who shows up at this hospice discovers is that they have a midnight club. So every midnight they meet and they tell each other scary stories. But as you might expect, the scary stories are kind of based on what's going on with them and their diseases and their lives and the end of their lives. But at the same time, there's a conspiracy thing going on in the hospice. So it's fun and it is scary.
Nothing
but
you just said would ever be classified
as
fun.
Romance.
Well, I will say, Pete, this is not a show for you.
Yeah, it's
okay,
really not.
Thank you. All right.
But it's not as scary as Mike Flanagan's other stuff, I will say that. But I enjoyed it, and I have been meaning to go back and check it out, but I just have not had a chance yet.
I mean, I definitely, I'm excited by that, because to me, the scariest thing is like a soccer coach who really believes in his team. And that's just too funny. Something I could never watch.
Wait, okay, I'm going to bring this up now. I was going to say this for trivia, but I've been thinking about this all week. I have a question for you, Pete. This is an audience question for me. I consider
myself a host
of the show and an audience member at the same time.
I don't like this.
So here's my question for you. In trivia, you pay tribute to a dead celebrity with your third answers, right?
Oh, my God. What is this?
And you go in date order, so you wait for it. So here's my question for you. Jason Sudeikis dies. Jason Sudeikis is Ted Lasso. Lasso is your favorite show. You've watched it 1 million times. This is legitimately, I actually want to know the answer to this question.
Worst nightmare.
You go in date order, right? So Jason Sudeikis dies an hour before we do a show or whatever you put together trivia. I assume it's an hour before, but maybe it's a week before. I honestly don't know. Whatever you put it on, it's enough time for you to do trivia on Jason Sudeikis. But earlier that day, 52 other celebrities who you don't quite care about as much as Jason Sudeikis, who plays Ted Lasso and Ted Lasso, also
like an Angela Lansbury.
Yes, one every half an hour or something like that, however you want to work it out.
Right.
Do you wait a year to pay tribute to Jason Sudeikis in your trivia?
Well, if that all went down, yes, I would. I mean, there is...
You would? That's
really?
How...
I kind of assumed that, but I'm still shocked to hear it at the same time.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, there is favor bumps. You know what I mean? Like some of them, I'm trying to go in order, but, you know, sometimes.
Who's calling for the favor here?
Yeah, the favor bumps them up a little bit. Like if I like
Please,
their
Pete,
earlier
the
work,
only way I'm going to get it to heaven is if you do me in trivia.
Yeah,
you know,
Pete
I'll get
is,
to you eventually.
Is
but
the,
you
he,
might
this
get
is
St. Sooner...
Peter right here. He lets people into heaven through trivia.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Pete. Or let me just say for real. If Jason Sudeikis died, we wouldn't see Pete for over a month.
Easy.
He'd be in full mourning. There'd be a dark time for Mr. Lynch.
Yeah. I mean, you know, belief would die, you know, so it would be tough.
Well, this is great to know. Thank you, Pete, for your honesty. I appreciate it. This is a question from our Patreon Slack, patreon.com/comicbookclub from Jake. Mm. You guys read so many comics a week for the stack and whatnot. My question is, what are you guys reading that doesn't make it on the show that you're just reading because you enjoy it for yourself? And it doesn't have to be a comic. It can be a book or whatever. Just what are you guys reading for your own enjoyment?
I guess just stop signs.
I was going to say, like, I used to do a lot more reading, but, you know, Comic Book Club takes up a lot of time and, you know, we're spending a lot of time reading comics. So my casual reading that was on a normal person's kind of like increase as time goes on has been on a decrease. So I went from doing a nice amount of casual reading to zero.
Well, the stack in the many, many years of Comic Book Club was three comic books. And now it is sometimes like 10x that. So, but I will say I agree. I have been reading less in this as I watch more TV and everything over the years and have not been traveling on the subway to a work or job, as that used to be called. But I have been trying to read. I just picked up George Saunders' new book of short stories, which I've started reading. And Alan Moore has a book of short stories out. And I got my hands on a signed copy of that. And I'm going to start reading that.
Was awesome. It cheaper? The sign went cheaper?
It was. And then he walked up to me and tore his name off of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of things that I've been reading, and I've talked about this on the show before, but even beyond Comic Book Club, having kids has meant like, why do I even bother reading? I can get through one page before they need something. But yeah. I've really been pushing myself to get back to it because I love reading and it makes me feel good to read a book.
Yeah.
So a couple of things that I've read recently. I read Fairy Tale by Stephen King, which is a new book, which is great. It's like, you know, very Stephen King take on a dark fairy tale.
I'm more Joel Hill than Stephen King, but that's nice.
Sure.
I don't think you need to choose.
It's friends. Just wild that guy is so far into his career and written so many books, and you still read a book and you're like, yeah, this is great. He's still really good at this point. So that was very good. A good short one, if you're looking for a short one to check out that I read recently, was a book called Dark Harvest, which was made into a movie by Universal that has been sitting on the shelf for like a year, which is wild. It's very like The Lottery, about this town that has a thing called the October Boy, which is essentially a scarecrow with a jack-o'-lantern head that, I'll give you the basic concept, even though like part of the joy is finding out what the fuck is going on while you're reading it.
So you can take all the joy.
They take all of the boys in the town from age 16 to 18, starve them for 5 days, and then release them on Halloween night. And their job is to kill the October Boy. And the October Boy's job is to get to the church in the center of town before midnight. And so it's like,
whoa,
it's wild. Crazy. It's like 200 pages long. It's very like high octane, all action all the time. If you're looking for a very quick, super fun read, check that out. Yeah, very good.
That's great. I have one more question tangential to this. Alex, I've noticed you've had some short stories published in some different things. So have you been writing more recently?
Not recently. I tend to have the impetus to write towards the beginning of the year, and I keep it up for like...
Oh, interesting.
But I keep it up for like 4 or 5 months or something like that, and then get distracted with Comic Book Club or other things. But yeah, I just had a short story published in this thing called, oh my gosh, I'm actually blanking on it. It's like something Passages, but it was a short story collection that it was published in. I could probably plug it on the Twitter or something like that.
Please do. Yeah. I'm curious, when do you write? Asking for a friend, me.
Yeah. It is mostly super early in the morning. And so that's been difficult over the past couple of months because my son wakes up very early and wants to play games in the morning and ask questions and talk about things, which is very lovely, but kind of cuts into the writing time. But that's when I had been writing. So once I get to the end of the year and I'm like, oh boy, I should do that again. Maybe then, maybe the middle of the day, probably not the middle of the day though.
That's but great. Because we'll early for you is got to be like 4 a.m.
Pretty much. It legitimately, like, if you want to do it, it's setting alarm for 4 a.m., waking up, writing for an hour before the kids wake up, and that's the only time I got.
Holy shit. That's crazy.
Yeah. But good question. Like that. This is from Straight Bullet. What's your favorite moment when you ratted to someone from your deep into your past?
Whoa.
Great question. I love running
my brain. Yeah,
It's hard. I recently orchestrated a run in with one of my good friends in college I hadn't seen for like 15 years. He moved to like truly the woods in Maine. Doesn't have social media or anything. Wow. Lost touch with him. Tracked him down through his he's a teacher at a school email, and then said, hey, we're going to be driving near you. Let's meet up. Met up with him and met like his family and kid. And like, I had never, hadn't seen any part of his life in so long. So that was very cool. Yeah.
Go ahead, Pete.
One of the fun things about my friend, the Unseen Vegan Dream, is he has a talent for just showing up at different places. He likes to just to kind of appear. And same thing. I hadn't seen him in like 10 years. And I was at the bodega by my house when I lived in Queens. And he was just in one of the aisles looking at a can of peas, you know. And I was just like, the dream? And he was like, what's up? And he stayed for a couple of days. It was crazy.
That's amazing. I mean, I will say one of the wildest ones, and I know we've had him on a couple of times, with Ryan Silbert, who grew up in Port Washington with me. It's just weird seeing him when I was like, oh, yeah, we grew up in the same town. We constantly talk about Mint Condition, the one comic book shop in town. So it's strange seeing him again in this context.
He was recently on the show, and he was talking about being on a Prodigy BB bulletin board.
Oh, that's right.
That I was on. And he was dropped the name of the head of the thing, Grendel. He was Venom. I knew that dude when I was on Prodigy in like 1993 or 94, something crazy like that. Wow. I was on a bulletin board with that dude. That's wild. That's and the insane. Fact that he said that is crazy.
We got one here on YouTube. This is from Azar Abdullah Ma. Any upcoming comics you guys are looking forward to? Tell me more. I stuck here in traffic morning here in Malaysia.
Hey, Malaysia, what's up?
Thank you for watching listening in Malaysia. Yeah. Normally we do this at the end of the show, but you guys want to talk about what you're looking forward to that's coming out this week? We can jump it up here for a dude that's stuck in traffic in Malaysia.
Early, yeah, but
well, I'm looking forward to Survival Street, number 4. It's such a fun, quirky, kind of Sesame Street meets the Punisher, if you will. And speaking of big pun, Punisher number 7 comes out, and yeah, it's a banger, dude. You know, slappers only. This is legit.
I mean, you know, Pete, I feel it's a little fucked up that you took my pick because this is sort of my guy. But Punisher number 7, I'm definitely.
Oh, it's your guy?
Punisher? Yeah, I think I've rooted. That's why I'm sort of the homage. I'm wearing this black and white shirt. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Punisher issue this week, absolutely fantastic. Also, shout out to That Texas Blood, another book that I love. The 19th issue comes out tomorrow, and this entire series is fantastic. Definitely worth the pickup.
Yeah, there's a bunch of really good things that are coming out tomorrow. Ones that I'll give a shout out to, just looking down here, I've really been enjoying The New Champion of Shazam from DC Comics, which focuses on Mary Marvel and takes a very unique sort of fun, very different take on her that I think works for both comic book fans and also fans of the movie. Also, Old Dog number 2 from Image Comics.
Oh, yeah.
An old dude who sucked back into the spy game. We had Declan Chalvey on a couple of months back to talk about this book. And so I was very excited to check this one out. And that is coming out tomorrow. And there was one more I wanted to... Oh, I always love just She-Hulk number 7 is coming out. Rainbow Rowell. Just writing a great romance book on the stands. You don't see that a lot. Good stuff.
Some great characters. I won't spoil, but some interesting characters pop up from another book that Rainbow has done. And I love the sort of romance that's happening in this.
Yeah. Oh, and one more I'll give a shout out to that I was very excited to read the second issue of and curious to get your guys' take on. Earth Divers, number 2 from IDW Publishing. This is a book about people who are traveling back in time to save America by killing Columbus. And it just had so many wild ideas in the first issue. I was really interested to check out the second one. We'll be talking about all of these issues more on the Stack podcast and getting into it.
One more I wanted to shout out is Bloodstained Teeth, number 6.
Oh, yeah. Any particular reason?
It's great, and it's tight bananas art.
Great. This is from Michael Tillman. Post-Halloween question, what's the top of your list for your parent tax candy pick for a kid's candy bag? Do we send Pete all the banana flavored Laffy Taffys?
Oh, bring it. Oh, come on.
Gross.
Yeah, win-win for me. For whoever doesn't like the best flavor, you sus.
Wait, before we get to that, I have a question. Justin, we talked about your Halloween costume. What were your kids dressed as?
Great question. Elena of Avalor and Rapunzel. So fully in the
you could have done a whole family thing and gone for like the Chicken Man and Mike Ehrmantraut. That would be fun.
No joke, we were like, and because we were sort of, this was last minute, but we were like, what if we have the kids dress as Mesa Verde and Sandpiper, the two main cases that went through the run of Better Call Saul, just like stacks of papers that came around with us. But we were like, we're going to make our kids dress as papers.
Yeah.
They will not like
it. Too bad. But why don't we do parent candy tax? What's at the top of your list, Justin?
What candy am I scooping off the top? I mean, I'm not a big candy guy. But if there's a Mr. Good Bar, I'm here for it. Almond Joy. That's about it.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Pete.
The first ones that my kids handed me with, so they didn't want anymore, was Twizzlers.
Yeah. And that's like handing.
Well, here's the thing. You guys know I love Twizzlers. One of my favorite candies. I don't love Twizzlers you get on Halloween. Like the mini Twizzlers, the Twizzlers pull apart, it's not the same thing.
Not the pull apart, just the two little ones that are together.
The two little ones, they're also like not the same thing. And my wife looked at me and I was like, why don't I like these as much? And she's like, because they're not stale. And I was like, you're right.
No,
that's ridiculous.
Which is weird and messed up to
you
identify.
Only like stale Twizzlers?
The Twizzlers you get at the movie theater that are like too tightly packed and like they've been sitting there for a couple of years. That's the one you want.
What? Yeah,
you only go to the haunted movie theater.
Yeah, I want the ones that have bite to them.
Yeah. Slightly rat bitten.
Any candy bar, you know, Baby Ruth, Butterfinger, Milky Way, Snickers, all that.
You're a nougat head.
Peanut butter cups. Bring it. I'm not saying no to any of
talking about podcasts. Nerds. Pete is begging for the day that Sweet Tooth comes back so we can start doing a podcast with candy.
I love it.
Our Sweet Tooth. I mean, honestly, that was Charleston one of the shoes, very fun. Put them in and the as I said, at the top of that Sweet Tooth podcast, Snickers is the king of all candy bars, and I was born out over the course of that. So.
Milky Way.
Just by the showrunner of the show.
Reese's Pieces. I mean,
are you
all
running
great.
A show called Sweet Tooth? You have the sweetest tooth.
That's why I don't have kids, because I wouldn't let them get any of the candy. I would just eat it all.
Yeah. It'd be a Trick or Pete situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Got a couple of questions here over on YouTube. This is from David Quinley. What comic would you like to see made into a show or movie? Me, I'd like Miracle Man. I feel like we get this question every once in a while, but do you guys have any sort of new answer? Anything that you feel like would
Lock and Key would be great. I'd love to see something like that. You know what I mean?
That would be cool. Yeah, just to see three seasons of that. And that's
I'll throw out one. I don't know if this would work, but this is just top of my head. Gwenpool might be kind of fun, particularly because Deadpool is so popular. Everybody loves Deadpool because of Ryan Reynolds. Might be kind of interesting to see some sort of spinoff there.
And Alex, you love breaking the fourth wall in She-Hulk, so I could see why you'd
This is right up your alley.
If you do it right, I'm not going to be upset about it, you know? Nat Towson says, Gwenpool cartoon? Great. I'm there.
Why not?
Very fun. She always breaks out into the real world.
Yeah.
Get a sort of Roger Rabbit situation going. I'm going to say Silver Coin, Ice Cream Man. I want to see some.
No, I don't want to see it. That's a horrible idea. That
a
is
lightly
so
connected
scary
horror
and
anthology.
So good. Ugh.
Very nice.
Great idea. Man. And the other one, I feel like we've definitely mentioned this before, but I feel like FX in particular could do a great job with Concrete as a series. Yep. Like you need somebody who's going to be able to take the time to make it crazy cerebral and not action driven at all. That would be awesome. Ben the Border Collie says Scalped. Another great idea.
100 bullets.
This is from All in the Game over on YouTube. Given the overall quality of his filmography, what superhero property would Rian Johnson be suited for?
Oh, great.
RJ?
Oh, you know him?
Yeah. Mr. Knives Out, Rian Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely leading into mysteries. He's got the whole Knives Out series. He's got a series on Peacock that I'm blanking on the name of with Natasha Lyonne. That's a done-in-one mystery series, like old-school Columbo style, which sounds very fun, very exciting.
I mean, Spider-Man Noir would be fun.
That would be good.
Oh, that's nice.
What about like Detective Chimp while we're going for the mystery thing?
All right. Yeah.
Interesting. Weird choice.
Like The Question.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Nathausen says Batman because we haven't really had a detective Batman. Like, I think the closest they've come is the Batman. Like, they actually made an attempt to make him a detective there.
Well, yeah, let me throw
I disagree with that. I mean, the Batman was more just like him being awkward in this human skin, just standing there going, oh.
Human skin. I'm going to throw Gotham Central out.
It's wrong.
Because I think that tracks with a lot of the things we're talking about while being lightly Batman adjacent.
Mm. What about this? Kevin says maybe something that isn't Marvel DC. How about Powers? That might be good. I know there was the PlayStation series that was huge. Everybody loved that.
I love playing through that on my PlayStation.
When I wake up in the morning, I turn on my PlayStation just to watch TV.
But that makes me want to say, if you're going on the Image route, that Texas Blood, the comic series I just read.
I would go as far as to say any Image comic.
There we go. This is from Nat Townsend. Question over on Crowdcast. Should I finally check out Stargirl? What are some other gems from the recent past that we may have missed? Now there are so many comic-based shows. And he also says, feel free to work a Netflix into this.
Netflix.
Guys, stop just giving Alex reasons.
That's great. But let me say, Alex, you didn't work it in. You just played it immediately. That's not working.
Yeah, let's give Alex more notes.
As somebody who has interviewed a good portion of the cast of Stargirl,
Netflix.
There we go. Well used.
I think the first season of Stargirl, and we talked about this on our podcast, shot way above its weight. Hit way above its weight. Excuse me.
Classic boxing metaphor.
You know,
Alex to a boxing match.
Oh man,
he brings a gun.
Oh man, I was there at the Mike Tyson fight in Vegas when he was like, shot him right in the face.
That's not
what I don't. Evander Holyfield. He was like, bat, doing the face. They're like, there's no rule.
I can't believe he got away with it. It was a knockout. He won.
I know.
Bit
his ear.
Man.
He shot it.
Anyway, the first season of Stargirl is great. Definitely check that out. Like, the villains in particular are awesome in that. And then second season.
We talked a lot about that. The villains are great, and it's much darker than thought it was going to be. It goes very hard, especially on the villain front.
Also, some we don't talk about enough, Arrow, start to finish, one of the best TV shows of all time.
I'm sorry, we actually got some other questions here we got to get through. Sorry, Pete. But Jonathan McCool says, after watching 100 Places to Parties, Justin says no to stuff montage. Can we make Justin the official say no guy for CBC too?
Great call. In the Portland episode, I'm the surly producer.
You are. Line producer, that is.
Nope, not my job. On camera, you can see me saying no to all the tattoo parlors that the hosts want to go to. It's fun. And I'll say no.
It's a fun montage. It's like, Justin, is that the... Nope. No, that's not it.
No.
Hey, is that the one we're going? Nope. Okay.
You can really get a little glimpse of what I wear on set through that montage as well. I look like I'm collecting layers in a weird way.
We got another question here on YouTube. Thoughts on Kelly Marcel making her directorial debut with Venom 3, with the exception of Saving Mr. Banks. Her screenplays have been pretty mediocre. 50 Shades of Grey, Venom, and Venom 2. For those who don't know the news, this was hinted at here, but she wrote Venom and Venom 2, and I believe Venom 3, and is going to be directing Venom 3, which is currently being sold as the grand finale of the Venom trilogy.
I feel like
the always conceived Venom trilogy.
I feel like it's in good hands. She's been there from the start, so at least she kind of knows it and knows the Venom sweet spots at this point.
I listen to this podcast called Script Notes about screenwriting, and Kelly Marcel is a guest on that podcast a fair amount. It's with John August and Craig Mazin, screenwriters. And she's actually talked about the Venom, making Venom, and the love and adoration that she uses to describe how they work, and the way that they get the Venom voice and the Venom character at the sort of the same time they're shooting both sides of scenes, makes me think she's She's going to deliver. When a writer who is a competent director has both of those reins, I think it actually enhances the project. So I think that you're going to be a good
show. It's going to be the best one yet. Three is going to be the best one.
Well, and also to the point that you're making, Justin, as far as we understand about the process here, a lot of it is like rewriting on the fly based on what Tom Hardy wants. So her being able to do that, obviously, like directing, that's a lot of other departments that you need to deal with at the same time. But her being able to be like, yes, me and Tom Hardy, who is a maniac, speak the same language, and being able to do that in a more quick fashion, I think it's going to be fine.
And I think that's a great point because, Tom Hardy is like, he has a lot of control of that project. And the movie revolves around him and his portrayal as of the character. So I think, yes.
Because sometimes he's just going to want to jump in the water and eat a lobster. You know what I mean? He's going to do a lot of different things.
I think I know you're sort of joking here, Pete, but I legitimately think that's a good point in terms of what makes Venom work, because over here at YouTube, this All the Game says, think they need a higher caliber writer director to give this third movie a chance to actually being good. I actually think what probably hurt Venom 2 was having Andy Serkis being like, I have a directorial vision for it. The first one, they were like, I don't know what we're doing. Tom Hardy's going crazy. He's jumping in a lobster tank.
Yeah.
Let's just go with it. And that's what you need. Like, I want to watch the Venom that is chaos. Exactly. That is 4 hours long, Tom Hardy going crazy. I don't want to watch them trying to get some sort of story for a Venom movie, because when it goes into the story, it's not as much fun.
Well, and I also think, like, this is, I guess, based on personal experience, but a lot of projects, you feel the sense of gravity establish itself in the beginning. And once the sense of the gravity is established in a certain place, if you try to move it, it ruins the project because it has been established. You have to lean into that. That's why I think this is the right move, because if you lean into this gravity, like Alex is saying, it's going to be like the chaos that the project has always been. And for that to be in a big budget superhero movie that people go watch and spend money to see, that doesn't happen anymore. Like, the big creative swings in superhero movies are very hard to pull off. And if they can do that here, I think we're it may be the best Venom movie of all.
Wow. Ooh, wow. That's a bold pronouncement. I guess we'll see what happens. We have two quick ones here to wrap up. This is from Jonathan McCool. Have you guys been watching The Peripheral on Prime? Thoughts, if so?
What is that?
I have not, but I want to. I'm intrigued by this show based purely on the advertising.
This is Chloe Grace Moretz, who Pete had a little bit of a dust up with back at C2E2 back in the day. So
right.
I don't know if the bad blood goes too deep for you to check this out.
Yeah, there is a character who looks suspiciously like you, Pete, that gets a real bad vibe.
Anyway, it is about virtual reality and reality mixing. It is from Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, who did Westworld, so most likely it'll fall apart by the end. I have not checked it out, but I am curious, just because even if I lump on Westworld all the time, I still watch every episode. And last
and
one, this is
crazy.
Yes, I know. I'm a broken man. Nat Townsend says, Pete, if you got a job to write the official Ted Lasso comic, what's it about and who draws it? Or you can pick another writer.
Ooh. Well, it would be funny to see like a gritty take, like Garth Ennis take a hold of it. You know what I mean?
No, I want the Pete take. What's that?
Yeah, but if I'm writing it,
Ted Lasso Born Again. I want to see that.
I'm sorry?
Ted Lasso Born Again.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm going to lean
Wait,
into the rom-com.
Wait, no, what's the thing where he goes back to Vietnam? Born Again is Daredevil. I got that wrong.
We talking about
the one where the Punisher, your favorite, welcome back, Frank. There we go.
Yeah, welcome back, Frank. Yeah.
Okay, welcome back, Ted. Anyway, take it away, Pete.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say I would lean into the rom com of it all, and
Really? You'd lean into the rom com?
Yeah, I would. I would.
Twist answer from our boy Pete LePage.
Yeah. Stop dancing around with will they, won't they? Let's get it, and Also, the
who
new
specifically
coach.
Are you talking
who,
about?
Who are you talking about?
Oh, you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Rebecca and Sam.
Oh, not Rebecca and Ted?
Nope.
That is not who we knew.
That's
none
not where
of
it's
us
going,
knew what
buddy.
You were talking about.
It's not where it's going.
I'm talking about the OG. You got two people named Sam and Rebecca. Come on.
You're quoting the show right now. I know.
Oh,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
You're quoting Ted. So wait, what? But what about Ted, the main character? What's he doing? If in your comic,
well, he's got a lot. He's got a lot of growth. He's got to deal with. He's still, you know, having a, you know, Nate the Great really did some horrible things. So him and Nate got to kind of reform that relationship, and we're going to get to the bottom of that. Plus, we got to find out what Trent Crim's doing now that he's independent. So, you know, we got to spend some time with Trent.
I'd love to see that. That's a spinoff comic we should get. The Independent Trent Crim.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really fun. That's definitely fun.
And if we're going to get somebody, not to answer your question, Peter, but if we're going to get somebody to write the comic, I think it should be Olivia Wilde. She's done some really interesting stuff in, like, Don't Worry, Darling, and a couple of other movies.
Yeah, I'm sure Jason
would be
behind
that.
Maybe he would serve her some sort of more divorce papers while she was trying to do her job.
Oh, come on, guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Huh?
We could have Harry Styles draw it. That would be fun. All right, why don't we move to our next section, which is trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right.
Oh, wait.
This is the part. Whoa, Stray Bully's first hand up.
Oh, my God. So quick. Here
he's
we go. We're
going to
bring
got
in Stray Bully.
He's got hair popping right now.
Yeah,
he's yeah
probably,
exactly.
He's probably
this is the main character.
No, it's just my baseball
comic.
Man.
Hey, wow. Stray Bully!
Hey, what's up?
Stray Bully out on the
is this
porch.
Is this my college reunion? Yes, I'm out on the porch.
I sat in that chair a couple months ago.
Oh, how are you feeling? You've been sick this week.
Yeah, I'm better. My stomach still feels like the bottom might drop out at any moment, but it was rough. Yeah, but I will say,
it feels like me when the McRib came back.
That's disgusting.
Yes.
Like, of all the weeks for me not to design a drink, I think
I know.
Like the week where I the character of the story was based off of me was probably not the week to not curate a fucking drink.
Bring it back next week,
dude. Yeah, don't be so hard on yourself, bro. You know.
Did you guys hear how cool I was in college though?
Also, having a vampire inspired by it, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, to have your coolness sustain, I want to say almost 20 years. Yes, Brooklyn.
Yeah, I mean, he just
he's in New Orleans, bro.
I'm in New Orleans. That's why there's lights all over the house. Look at you. what's funny about Fernando is Fernando and I had a lot of firsts together. Because we started college pretty much the same time. We both turned, look at this is the whole house. Spiders up there and everything. New Orleans, we light it up, you know.
You know it's November 1st, right? You got to take that.
I know, it's Dios de los Muertos,
don't be that
so
guy.
It still counts.
Boo.
It still counts.
Sorry.
But we had so many firsts together. He took me out for my first drink, gave me my first fake ID. Like, we had good times. And he used to come up with stories all the time. We worked together. So he would come up with stories all the time. He had stories about vampires and bounty hunters and all kinds of shit. Yeah.
Cool. Wow. I look forward to all of them featuring you as the main character.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't wait for
my fucking mind is kind of blown. Well, first, like I saw who was coming up, but I didn't put it together because why would you? Why would you put together that this is the same person you went to college with? Even though I follow him on Instagram and I whatever. Like, and normally I even research the people ahead of time and like, to make the drink, but then I got sick and I was like, well, I'm not doing that.
It is all good. And as a payback, you're either going to get $25 from Midtown Comics.
Oh, I'm sorry, but that's all the time we have for trivia.
Or Long John Silver.
All right. Or Long John Silver is your choice at the end, probably with an upset tummy, not Long John Silver's. But Pete, take it away.
Does Long John Silver have a charity? Donate to? Or is Long John Silver the charity?
That's
technically Long John Silver is a charity at this point. Yeah.
If there is a charity you would like to donate to, we could also do that at the end, assuming you win. But Pete, take it away.
Here we go. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend.
Jason Sudeikis.
Angela Lansbury. Oh, okay. Be respectful.
Ooh, she must have done some favors to get up jokes.
Yeah.
Okay, please listen to all three options before you make your selection. Question number one. New comic alert. What is the name of the new comic coming out in 2000, 23 starring Blade's daughter? Is it A, Humans Are My Food, a cookbook, B, Bloodline, or is it C, Bill, I'm Not a Farmer, Farmer? So B is the only one that's an actual answer.
Yeah. It sounds like the best answer, Bloodline. All right. Especially with his daughter.
Bloodline.
Bloodline. Yeah, that's what they did there.
Vampires. Okay. And
Titan Comics announced that they will be doing the next Conan the Barbarian series written by blank. Is it A, Jim Zub, B, Stymie Loberson, or C, Kimmy Robertson? So it's A, Jim Zub, which is an actual comic book writer, or you could be completely wrong.
Hey.
Nice. That is correct. Last one. Boom Studios is celebrating 40 years of blank with a deluxe hardcover comic. Is it A, Sea Monkeys, B, Dark Crystal, or C, Jerry Orbach?
B?
You are correct.
Wow. No hint. Well,
no hint, and you nailed got it.
Tempted to pick Jerry Orbach, but sure.
Somebody should put me in a comic. Change my name to Bishop.
Would you like $25 of Midtown Comics, Long John Silver's, or the charity of your choice?
I'll pick a charity and I'll email you. How's that?
Okay. All right. That sounds great. And do you have an idea about the secret tribute to Angela Lansbury?
No. You're a Lansbury.
No idea. Yeah, no. I can't even remember the name of the show that she did.
1991. Super mega hit Beauty and the Beast.
Oh,
wow. All right, cool. There we go. Brett, thank you so much for coming on. Feel better. Please take down those decorations.
Come on.
It's Dios de los Muertos.
It's right, tomorrow, though. Tomorrow you're going to do it, right?
Yeah, we'll do it tomorrow.
Well, when the sun
Thanksgiving
comes
shit goes up.
Yeah.
We start,
like 4 a.m. when Halloween. I'm up and writing and everything.
Yeah, see, down here we start at Halloween, and then we go to Thanksgiving. Like, you see, all the green will come down and across the street, see over there, like they'll go more like even more fall colors and put like, my wife has like turkeys and shit. And then after that, we go Christmas. And then after that, we go straight into Mardi Gras.
Nice.
I love it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Decorating takes up about 80% of your life.
Yeah. We get days off for it. It's like,
yeah. No, I mean, that's true.
Amazing. Brett, have a good night. Right. So
bye,
good
guys.
Seeing you.
See you, Brett.
All right, there we go. Now, usually we talk about what we're looking forward to, but guys, we already did that. So instead, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Dr. Susie Stein and Mr. Fernando Perez for coming on to talk about Heavy Metal's Mark of Kings and Inversion. You can check those both out on their website. Dan Price for talking about Bigfoot Knows Karate. The Kickstarter for issue 2 is up right now. Next week on the show, big one, we're going to have Will Morris is going to be here to talk about Gospel, and Paul Cornell is going to be here to talk about Zoops, Saucer Country. I'm sure we'll sneak in some questions about his other work as well. A couple of things you can check out. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We have a new episode about Thor, Love and Thunder. Finally, very delayed, but that is up as of
today. We had to let it marinate. We had to think
about it. Exactly. We had to really think about it. Also, the Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast, getting very close to the end of season 3. The Umbrella Podcademy, our Umbrella Academy podcast, just finished up. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe and follow on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night. Go watch it, Doc.
That's the fun.